RapidDeploy is the CAD of the future. It's cloud-aided dispatch, not dinosaur computer-aided dispatch that looks like it was built in the 1980s. RapidDeploy's cloud-native CAD mapping and analytics increase situational awareness for call takers, dispatchers, and responders. RapidDeploy is taking public safety by storm. It's fast and easy to deploy, with implementation in days, not years. It's affordable for all agencies of all sizes, rich in features, functionality, and data. It's also reliable and secure as we use Microsoft Azure Government Cloud. Go to rapiddeploy.com to learn more.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning, this episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live there.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 273 of Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This episode is supported by RapidDeploy, as well as RapidSOS, presented by Nina, and always supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. So this episode is going to be, it's going to be a little different. It's also going to be a little bit out of order. Because when I was in the vendor hall for the National Indie Conference, I had recorded episode 272. Now, I had it set up to record episode 273 already, and I ended up having to go do a demo for InDigital. And when I came back and got ready to record, I ended up skipping over 273 and went from 274 all the way on to about 278. So we are filling in this episode here, and we're going to be talking about four or five different calls, 911 calls that we've either lived or we've just dealt with it. And we're going to have some discussion about it here. So I have guests with me today, and we are at my family's house right now recording this. I just posted this up on Instagram. We are sitting on the floor in the living room recording this episode. And I have with me my sister, Crystal. How's it going?
Hello.
Yeah, what's up? And then my other sister, Devon, and her boyfriend, Chris. What's going on?
Hi.
Yo.
Why do you got a blanket on? You're what?
I'm cold.
Oh, there you go. Okay. I'm sitting like real close to the vent, though, and it's all right. No?
It's frosty because you have a hairy butt.
And it starts. Wow. All right. Yes, so my Within the Trenches audience, welcome to my family. This is going to be good. So one of the first things I want to talk about is I've got this list here of calls, but the one that I was going to start with, I'm going to skip over because this other one, we lived this. And I want some discussion because, and our mother is actually sitting in back of us as well. I don't know if that picked up. She's like, hello.
I can hear it.
Yeah. But so we had something that happened. Oh, man. It's been in the early 90s. And I know I've talked about this on the podcast before. Actually, I think I talked about this during a Halloween episode, talking about the house that we grew up in because it was a haunted house. But what we're going to talk about right now didn't have to do with ghosts or anything like that. But it was wintertime. It was early 90s, wintertime, and we were all at our aunt's house. And it was the first time that we were going to be doing the nativity play. and we were there practicing it. We were going to be doing this on Christmas because our entire family would get together and we would do this.
Our family is so serious. They're like, we got to have rehearsals for our family play that we're putting on for everyone to enjoy. They took it so seriously.
Right. Yeah, they did. They even went as far.
Costuming.
Our mom, yeah, and our aunt. Yeah, they put all the costumes together and we were doing it all. We even sang carols, which our brother, Fernando, ended up. I wish we had the video. So just to kind of skew off really quick, we were singing these Christmas carols and he's playing the little drummer boy and he ends up doing a big old air guitar. the whole time that we're doing this. And I can see it in my head like it was yesterday. It was amazing. But anyway, one of the times that we were there, they were doing all the costume stuff. We were rehearsing and then we went home. And I remember when we went home, I was holding on to this huge ass Singer sewing machine. And we go up into the house. Now, when you get to our house, you walk down this little cement pathway. You go upstairs. There's a little porch area and then our main door. And the door had this long string of Christmas bells. And we always knew when somebody was there or somebody was coming in or opened the door, whichever, because as soon as you open the door, the bells would go off real loud. And I remember I was the first one going in, holding on to the sewing machine, and Mom was right in back of us. And I went to open the door, not thinking that the door should be locked because we always lock the door. And I go to turn the knob and the door opens completely. And I remember turning around and looking at Mom and saying, "Did you leave the door unlocked?" And she goes, "No." And we looked down and, you know, right where the door latch and everything was, there was a chunk missing. Like somebody had kicked in the door.
Open, yeah.
Yeah. And when I had opened the door, you could hear the cling, 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 cling. And I remember we freaked out and we ran outside. Now, how old were you guys?
Gosh, we had to be like six probably. Probably six.
Six, because when I was in the accident, I was eight.
Yeah.
So okay.
A little before then. Yeah, six. Right on the money, I think.
Dang, man. Yeah. So what do you remember from, do you remember any of that?
I had nightmares after that.
For real?
For real, yeah. Because
I'm all laughing. I'm sorry. Like, haha, you had nightmares.
She had PTSD.
Your room had the window in it, and the window was facing the porch. Mm-hmm. And I always thought to myself, if someone came in, they could walk up the porch steps through the back and open your window. And I always thought, like,
I never thought about that. Thanks.
That scared me forever afterwards.
We had a lot of windows, facing out towards where you could pretty much almost just crawl in. So,
because the other windows, like in the front of the house, you couldn't reach them.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was no way to get up to them. But that window was always facing the porch. And I always thought, if someone's going to come in, they're going to come in through there. So then I was like, should I carry a knife in case it put me in a bag?
Okay.
So
at 6 years old?
Yeah, that scared the crap out of me. I was like, hey, no.
I just remember Mom, like, freaking out, and Grandma, and we all got back in the car, and when she called and they came, the police came and everything, they came to
look
at the
house. We were stupid back then, though, because I also remember being excited going back to Thea Mary's house, because I was like, we can just spend the night.
That's true, yeah.
Like, Dad wasn't there.
Not to
Dad was gone. I don't remember. Where was Dad?
Yeah, a little backstory. So our father was gone. He was in Donna, Texas. He was out there with the rest of our uncles, his brothers, because our grandmother, his mom, was really sick, and he was gone for maybe about a month or so. And so we were there alone, and so he wasn't there. And yeah. And yeah, I remember us hauling ass out of the porch area. And I mean, our grandmother who was with us, Mom's mom, was I mean, she was old. And I don't
she
know. I don't. Yeah, I know. I was gonna say I don't remember how she got out of there. If Mom picked her up on her shoulder, or what happened. But I remember us running, and
she threw all of you guys in the car.
Well, I mean, like we didn't have cell phones back then. So what did we do? Go all the way back to Thea's house?
No, we went to the nearest gas station, and Mom called 911 from the payphone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then. and then we ended up going back, and you know, Mom, and so our aunt lived behind our house. We had another house in back that we rented out, and our aunt lived there with her kids and stuff. And we went over there and we were hanging out with them, and then Mom walked through with one of the deputies from there in Allegan County.
Yeah.
And then once they went through, and it was the craziest thing because there wasn't anything that was stolen. I mean, there was stuff that was stolen, but it wasn't because we had a lot of electronics and a bunch of other stuff there.
They said they left all of that
there. Yeah, and they just stole a bunch of clothes is what it was.
Yeah, blankets and stuff there. Mm-hmm. So they said it must have been like homeless people or people who needed something warm.
Because it was something.
Some cold ghosts, I guess, because it was snowing. I mean, it was cold. So they were saying they must have come in just to take, you know, stuff to stay warm.
And that's the only place that they had broken into was the front door. That was the front door that was kicked in.
There were so much easier ways to get into the house.
Yeah. The giant sliding doors.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Somebody could have easily thrown something through there and walked through there and
got all of our stuff. Like you said, our valuables. We had a lot of electronics. So
and then split.
They didn't steal anything. They didn't steal the TVs or the video game consoles or stereo systems, nothing.
That was just, like, really close. Freaky. But yeah, we ended up going back to our Thea Mary's, our Aunt Mary. And we were there for almost 2 weeks. We stayed there.
Because we were waiting for Dad to come back. Mom didn't want to go back to
the
house.
That was fun because we got to go home on the other bus.
That was.
She also thought it was exciting to go home on the other bus.
Yeah, like, oh, we get to go on the other bus. Awesome.
You're a weird kid, weren't you?
Deprived of excitement.
Yeah, the other bus. Yay. The other cheese wagon. So we end up going back because Dad still wasn't back. I don't think he came back for another week.
Oh, yeah.
And we end up going home. And I remember all of us being freaked out being there that first night. And Grandma had said for us to, we were all going to sleep in her room. And I remember we all crashed out, all cooped up in her little room. And I remember waking up in the middle of the night. I don't know why I woke up. Maybe it was just because I heard talking or whichever. But I end up opening the door and I see Mom and a deputy standing by the sliding door.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out what had happened. And maybe you should come up to the microphone and say what happened.
What happened
when somebody was trying to come to the sliding door? I remember you saying that you heard it or...
Because that was the second time when we got back into the house.
Yeah, that was after they broke in the first time.
Room. We were all in Grandma's room.
Yeah, and you said that you heard something and you came to the sliding door and she could see that someone was trying to open it.
Yeah.
Because we had those big, heavy curtains or whatever that were in front. And when it was dark outside, you couldn't see through that window. Like, that's it was true. The reflection would come back to you.
Yeah.
So I remember Mom saying that she was trying to figure out what to do because she could see that somebody was trying to open the door and that she freaked out.
And that's when I called 911 because we used to sleep with the phone beside me.
Oh, man.
All for that whole time your dad wasn't there.
Yeah. We were cool enough back then to have a wireless phone.
We had that phone.
The one with the extra long cord.
Oh, it was a long cord rotary phone and stuff.
Yeah, it was super long. You could stretch it all the way from the kitchen almost into the living room.
They got there and they saw the steps and the door looked like it was trying to open it.
And then after that, Mom started putting that piece of wood there in the door so they couldn't open it.
Well, I was pretty sure there was a piece of wood there already.
Was there?
But it was... the wrong way. I had it the wrong way.
She had it slanted. And Theo Steve was like, no.
Way to go.
Yeah, and then after that, Theo Steve came and he put in all those deadbolts in all of the doors.
That's true.
All of the locks.
So we go back and we're all sleeping there. And then
we had a gun with a license.
We ended up having that as well for protection there. But just the way, you know, it's crazy that there were so many different things that happened at that house, and that being one of them, the fact that we were there when someone again was trying to break in, and then having to call, you just smashed your foot on the table. Yep. You all right? But yeah, that was just one of those things that ended up happening that we were there that we all dealt with. That someone was trying to break in, and we had to call 911 for that. And I mean, there are other stories that we have connected to this house too, where different things happened. And one of the things I'll talk about, not that it's connected to the house, but mostly because of the fact that the house was haunted, which it really was.
Link in the comments.
Yes. Yeah. There it will be another. I'll put something in the comments as well as on the post so that you can listen to the story about the haunted part of the house. But the area that we lived in, there was a lot of different things that happened. And again, I'll get to that part here shortly. But like I said, that was one of the things that we dealt with as a family. And, you know, people trying to break in and having to call 911. You know, there was other times where we had to call 911 for family members, whether they were, you know, just sick or they were, you know, like our Uncle Max, you know, when he passed away, you know, our mom had to call 911 for him. And it was just a lot of different things. Just, man. Was connected to 911 that way.
Yeah.
It's weird. You know, a lot of stuff that happened. And then, you know, when Grandma passed away, you know, I was the one who took that call. And There's a lot of different things associated with that. But you know, when my wife and I moved back to Michigan from Florida, we had an incident that happened where we ended up, well, I was going to call 911, but someone had called already. So I ended up not, but we were face to face with a person who had just crashed their car. So I'm going to play something really quick, and it's just going to be a little bit so that people know what song this is. And whenever I hear this song, it's a trigger. So let me play that really quick. My dream. So this is Behind Blue Eyes, originally done by The Who, but Limp Bizkit ended up doing a cover. And during the time that we had come back to Michigan, this song had been released and had been all over the place. And the reason I bring this up, because the night that we got to our dad's house, because we were living with him for a little while in the beginning, I don't remember what time it was that night. It was pretty late. And I remember we both woke up and we hear a girl screaming, just screaming and screaming and screaming for help.
And our dad lived?
Yeah. Oh my God. So our dad lived out in the Bangor area. If you know Bangor, Michigan, it's pretty much, it's where he was at. It's in the middle of nowhere. He owns one or two neighbors
who watched his house when he wasn't there.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, any coverage for cell phone is real spotty out there. He's got 10 acres of land and such. So again, in the middle of nowhere. And when we came, when we were there, it was, I think maybe October or something like that. So weather was still fairly okay, but he lived on this all dirt road. And again, it's middle of the night. We hear screaming and a girl yelling for help. And I remember her saying, "Do you hear that?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, I can hear that." And I got up and it got closer and closer and closer and then pounding on his front door.
Yeah, that's like nightmare fuel.
Right. And she goes, go look. I said, "Okay, I'm going to go. And I go over there and I open the door and there's a girl there. And she's like, please let me in. And she comes in. And, you know, I said, "What's going on now?" Watch a lot of movies.
I know.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Exactly.
The Hills Have Eyes. Yeah. Everything where, like, somebody asks you for help and just like, "Ooh, man, it's a trap."
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You have that split second where you're thinking that, right? And I remember thinking the same thing, but she had said she'd been in an accident. And I said, "Okay, well, where at? Are you okay?" And she was, it was the craziest thing because she didn't have a scratch on her.
Oh, man.
Which was slightly suspicious.
Yeah, you're like, oh.
Right. So then I ask her where the car is at, and she goes, "It's out here." And the wife came with me, and we walk out, and it is across the street in a field a little bit far down from Dad's house, and you can see the lights on in a car in the field.
But you're like, is that what?
Right. Yeah.
Really an accident?
Yeah. Am I going to get out there and they're going to take me out or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we keep walking and she is just telling us what had happened. She was coming back home from the convenience store and she's on the dirt road and she was going a little fast and she lost control and she rolled it. Oh, so man. She completely rolled it and it went into the middle of the field. And as we're getting closer, that song is playing.
Ew.
Real loud
on her car.
Yes.
Oh,
it was
freaky.
Still loud playing. And that the part where I started it, that's what was playing. And I remember we get to the car, like you can see it as you're walking up and the half or the side of the car where the driver's side would be, it was smashed in and she must have crawled out from the passenger side.
Rolled out of there.
Good yeah. Lord. And she got out with no scratches or anything, man. You would never know that she was in that accident. And we got out there and the car was still, I mean, it was still on.
Yeah,
you know, I turned it off and it just was like smoking. But the song was on so loud. Every time I hear that song, I think about that night.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it is a straight up trigger.
I was gonna say.
And
crazy adrenaline. Yeah. Like, I could imagine your heart being like,
oh, for real.
Crazy walking out there being like, oh, God.
It was freaking nuts, man. So we go back to the house and I'm getting ready to call. And she goes, someone already called. And they had, because somebody had pulled up already and they were out there, and she went back out and they helped her out, and the car stayed there. But then they got in the morning. But excuse me, I will never forget that night, man, because it was the first night that we were there. And then the first thing we hear as we're going to crash screaming, out is, oh my screaming, God, no help way. Me and stuff. Yeah, that was freaky. And then being, you know, in the middle of nowhere in the woods and then walking towards the car. And that's what you hear real loud.
Yeah.
Is Fred Durst singing this Behind Blue Eyes song.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah, man. That one was pretty nuts. I will never forget that one. But, you know, talking about that suspicion and everything of, you know, if you go to help someone, are you really going to help someone that's in need, or are they tricking you?
Yeah.
You know, there's always that little bit there. And I don't know if that's because of TV shows or movies or whatever, if we're just naturally suspicious, sort of.
Just society now. That's kind of sad.
Yeah, you don't know if you should help someone or not.
So here's the thing. When I was in dispatch, I took a phone call from a couple who had pulled up to a car that was broke down. And the hood was up and everything. And I'm trying to remember what kind of car they were in. A pretty nice sports car.
Yeah.
The people who had pulled up to help the other people, and they get out of the car and they go to say, you know, do you need any help? And they had said that they felt like, you know, should we stop or shouldn't we? What if it's now we're going to go ahead and stop. The only time they've ever stopped to help somebody, and they get out to go and help these people or this person. And once they get by, someone comes up from behind them at gunpoint and they steal their car.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my God. No,
it was nuts. Mm-hmm. And we put, you know, a BOL, a be on the lookout for that vehicle and the two people, the descriptions and everything else. And, I mean, my shift ended before they ended up finding them, but that was one of the things that I thought, man, you know, it's almost like that. What's her name? Alanis Morissette. The irony, like you wait this whole time to go on a plane and then you do and it goes down. Well, these people, you know, they've never helped anyone before. They've always felt uneasy about it. And then they take a chance and they go to help them. And then they're, happens.
That's scary.
This freaking nuts, man. But I remember that. I see people, and I've stopped to help people before, but that always is in the back of my head. But I think,
was telling you about that kid here.
Oh, right.
It was the same thing. I mean, I don't know. It's like, I remember too, because Devon, I don't know if she said that she was awake or whatever. But I heard it. I mean, I was sleeping and I literally just sat up in bed because I heard it. I mean, a kid crying, screaming. What the heck? It was one of those moments where you wake up and you're like, am I dreaming? Is this like some crazy, scary nightmare?
Exactly.
And I completely sat up in bed when I heard it. No, that can't be what it is that I'm hearing. And I mean, my room, my AC unit is literally right next to my window. So it's always turning on and turning off. And I thought, no, I'm not hearing something right. It's like just these noises mixed together or whatever. And I sat up and I heard it and I thought, and then I got up and I walked towards the front door and I stood there and I waited and I heard it go by again. And then it's something. I mean, because we live in a trailer park where people are being crazy and yelling and screaming all the time. Mm-hmm. So I figured, you know, well, it's just these people being crazy again. You know, they're usually yelling or being loud or whatever. And I remember thinking, I'll just go back to bed. But then when I went back into my room, I heard it again, but it was closer. I mean, it was really far away at first, and then it kept getting closer and closer and closer. And what the fuck? What is this? I was like, this is like a scary movie. Literally some horror film where, you know, you hear screaming or creepy kid crying in the middle of the night. I mean, it was 2 in the morning.
And you don't have kids.
Yeah, and you don't have kids. That's even scarier. And it was 2 in the morning. And I was, there's no way there could be a kid outside. Like, what would a kid be doing outside at 2 in the morning? And I remember hearing it and I thought, no, that is what it is. It's getting closer. It got right by my window and then faded away real creepy. What the heck? And I remember getting on my phone And I was messaging Devon and I was like, dude, are you awake? Did you hear that? And I waited, one of those moments where your heart is racing. And I was like, oh my God, Devon, text me back. I was like, what's going on? And then she ended up messaging me and she's like, yes, I heard it. And she was like, I'm waking up Chris. And I was waiting there by the door. And I'm like, oh my God, because it was just me here at the house.
Right.
And Devon's at her house. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? And that really freaked me out.
And then it turned out that there was a kid that was walking around. And so, yeah, he was lost.
And yeah. And it was one of those moments where you're like, should I go outside? Like, if it is a kid, why is there a kid out there? It sounded like a small kid. And it was. He was two or three, a little kid walking around. I mean, it would be like Olivia walking around. Your kid.
And they found him, though, right?
Yeah.
They ended up finding him and
stuff.
Well,
another neighbor opened, when he crossed the street, the other neighbor opened the door.
Took him inside
and called the police, and the police came and then found where he was from, which was just another trailer farther down. But the kid apparently
had been out there for hours, walking around, and it was cold. And then it was, I mean, obviously it's not that cold in Florida, but it was cold in the morning. It was like maybe 40 some degrees or something. It was during
the winter time, it gets cold enough.
And the thing
is, he was walking around in clothes. I mean, he was just walking around and he didn't, I guess he got confused from where he came out of, and then he couldn't find his house. I mean, he's a little kid,
right?
I mean,
well, at that age, of course.
3-year-old, it's like all the trailers look the same. So he was just wandering around crying, and I mean, he could have walked out into the highway. We live so close to the highway.
Yeah,
or somebody could have picked him up. I mean, it did freak me out. I was like, should I open the door, should I not open the door? I mean, I wanted to, but then on the other hand, there could be somebody out there. Like, I don't know who's out there with the kid. I mean, I don't know what they're doing. So don't open the door. Don't open the door. But I wanted to open the door, too, because I felt bad. But, yeah, it's one of those crazy moments. What do I do?
Yeah. But, you know, luckily, you know, he ended up walking across right there and somebody pulled him in and they found him. That's the good thing about it. But I can just imagine just in the middle of the night. Well, like I said, with that girl who came
screaming,
it was just screaming and oof.
Yeah, people pounding on your door, and yeah, that's scary.
Something kind of similar where, you know, I didn't know how long this person had been out in a spot yelling for help. This was probably a couple of years or so before I ended up hanging up my headset before I switched from the public sector to the private sector. I was in dispatch, and I remember my boy and I, man, he had to have been maybe seven. Yeah, maybe seven or eight, something like that. And we were gonna order Chinese takeout. And we've got the menu, and I don't remember what service I had back then, but it blew. And the only time I could make any calls, I had to step outside of the house. And we had stepped outside, and we were walking towards the front of the driveway. And we're looking at the menu at the same time. And I was getting ready to call to order. And I hear, somebody help me, help. And I stood there for a moment and I looked down at Logan and his eyes are just wide open. And I said, okay, you did hear that? And he goes, yeah, I heard it. I said, do you see anybody? And we're looking around and looking around, looking around, and we don't see anything. And I thought, maybe somebody's watching TV. So we go back to looking for what we were going to eat, what we were going to order for dinner. And then we hear it again. Help, 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 help. And I'm looking around and looking around. And I said, it sounds like an older lady. And we don't see anybody. Now, as we're standing there, you know, when you're looking for someone or something, you know, you're just like looking left and right or behind you. You're not looking up and down. And, or usually you're not looking up and down. I know I wasn't looking up and down. I was looking left and right to see what was, you know, eye level that I could see right away. And then I heard it as I turn. And then I looked down and I just happened to look down and there was a little old lady lying in the driveway of this, adult foster care home.
Oh, yeah.
And it was right across the street, and I'm looking over and she says, help again. And I said, Logan, go inside, tell your mom that I'm going to call 911 right now. I'm going to help somebody. And he's like, okay. And he runs inside really fast. And I ran across And I come up to her, and there's a couple grocery bags, or there's one that's in front of her. Actually, it was just one that she had, and it's in front of her. But the way she was laying, I couldn't see it because it looked like she was trying to get herself up, but she couldn't. She didn't have enough strength to get herself up. And so I couldn't see the bag that was in front of her. So I run up to where she's at, and I said, "Ma'am, are you okay? Are you okay?" And she goes, "Oh, I fell. I think I've hurt myself." And I said, "Okay, well, we don't want to move you or anything." And then I thought, she's actually in danger right now. If I don't know how long she had been there. Had a car come and was not paying attention, they would have run her over, man, because she was right there. Yeah. And I said, "Okay." I said, "I'm not supposed to move you, but you're in danger right here." And I said, "So do you feel like you're hurt at all in any way? You know, is there anything on you that, you know, that you feel like you're hurt?" She goes, "No." She goes, I'm fine." She goes, "I have kind of a headache, but I'm okay." And I said, "Okay, I'm going to try to help you up." And man, she had to have been in her like mid to late 80s. She was an elderly woman. And I go to pick her up, and I mean, she's frail. And I'm going to pick her up and stuff. And I stand her up, and I've got my arm around her, and I'm holding her up. And she turns and looks at me, and she goes, "Thank you so much." And when she does, her forehead, like, she had skin that just flapped open. And she just started bleeding. And I said, ma'am, do you have like any kind of cloth or anything?" I was going to take my shirt off, dude, and put it on her forehead. And she actually had cloth that was in her bag, and I got it, and I'm pressing it on her forehead. I said, "We got to put pressure on it." I said, you'll eventually stop bleeding, but you have to keep pressure on it. If it keeps going, then you're not pressing hard enough. So keep pressing," which it's actually written in the protocol medical dispatching. And, so I'm telling her this as if I had her on the phone, but I'm right there with her. And I'll never forget her saying, "Thank you so much. You were like my guardian angel. You just came out of nowhere." I was like, "Oh, ain't nothing, ma'am." But here's the craziest thing is that I'm there with this. I don't know what her name was. I don't remember her name. And even if I knew her name, I wouldn't say her name, but I'm just going to make up a name. I'm just going to say her name was Ethel. We'll just go with Ethel. I look towards the doorway, and one of the nurses is there, and she's looking, and I'm pointing and I'm saying, "Get out here. You need to come and help her." And she's trying to get through the door. And I guess after a certain time, they close the door. And so she's trying to manually pull it open. Yeah. And she can't do it. And she starts laughing, and she puts up her finger like, "One second."
And you're like,
"Do you have, you seriously, this lady's bleeding over here. You need to get over here." So then she comes out with a wheelchair, and she goes, "Oh, Ethel, what have you done now?" I said, "Are you serious?"
She's like,
she's injured. Yeah, she's injured right now. And she goes, "Well, I just went grocery shopping, and you told me that the door over there was going to be locked. So I came over here, and it looks like that one is the one that's locked." And she goes, "Oh, well," and she was trying to say something else. And then a few other nurses came out. They ended up opening up that door, and they came out to help. And they said, "Well, you can go ahead and go now." And I said, "You guys aren't going to call 911 or anything?" I said, "I know you guys are able to treat her, kind of, but you don't need to call."
"You don't know, yeah."
And said, "Well, you know," and I said, "You know what? I'm just going to call." And so I called 911, and I'm on the line with them, and I start giving them all this information, just going and going and going and going. And they're like, "Okay, hold on. And he said, "How do you know all this stuff?" And I said, "Oh, I'm a dispatcher with Allegan." They're like, "Oh, hey." I was like, "Oh, hey." And
hey,
yeah. And so then first responders got there, and you know, they did their thing, and Ethel kept saying, "Thank you."
They probably didn't want to do it because they probably have to file like an incident report or something.
Oh, never forget that, man. And
was she a resident there?
Yeah. She was a resident there at the nursing home. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they let her go out and stuff, and I mean, she was doing her thing. What she had told me before everybody got out there was that because that the closest door was locked and she had to come to the other one, she made it that far, but the stuff that she had in her bag was way too heavy, and she just lost all her strength, and she just went face forward, man, and she fell.
How long was she there?
I don't know. God. She says that she said that she didn't even know how long she was there because it had been that long that she had been out there. Yeah, it was something else, man. But that was something. That was something. Another time, you know, just helping out and calling 911. I remember turning around and going across the street and going back to my place, and the wife and the boy were standing there, and Logan is just clapping. I walk up and he starts with a slow clap. And then he starts clapping and he's like, "Good job, Dad." I was like, "Thanks, buddy." I don't know.
I was going to say it's random, but because you were saying about telling him all the information and everything, and I think you've told me that kind of stuff before, like the stuff they'll ask for. And that actually happened at my job where there was a car sitting outside and it was blocking the entire entrance, like just this empty car. And people kept coming in and complaining about the car blocking the exit of the building. And I was like, what is this car doing out there? So I kind of like walked out there and I saw the car and I was like, okay. I was like, well, from here I can see the license plate, the color, the make and model. I was like, I took a little piece of paper and I wrote it down I wrote it down and I took it back inside with me and I called 911 because I was like, I don't know what the car is doing there. And it looked like they had just, it was parked crooked. So I was like, why would somebody just park it in the exit? It's not like they even tried to park it in a parking spot. So I went back inside and I called them and they were like, okay. And I was like, well, they're just a suspicious random car sitting in our exit and no one can get out. So they're blocking the whole driveway. And they're like, did you happen to get the, I was like, license plate? And they're like, yep. And I was like, do you have the make and model? I was like, and I got the color too. And they were like, oh, okay. They're like, all right. I was like, well, we'll send somebody to go get
you
it.
You are a good caller.
And they're like, all the information. And I was like, you're welcome. I was like, I looked. And they're like, was there anybody? I was like, nope, there wasn't anybody in the car.
Isn't that funny? Because, okay, like you remembered to do it. But a lot of the time when it's a, when it's a person, you don't think to notice any of those things, like,
oh yeah,
because when something's going on that you really don't, yeah, like that's what they ask you. And I was like, holy cow, like the few times I've had to call, they ask me and they're like, well, what did the person look like? And I'm like, oh, and they're like, how was their hair? And I'm like, oh man, I didn't notice like if they had their hair up, if they were wearing glasses or not, like how tall they were. I mean, I think of everyone, I guess, in comparison to myself. So then I'm like, everybody's freaking tall. Like everyone's tall compared to me. Like, oh, were they average height? Were they gargantuan? Like, oh, you know,
gargantuan.
But that too, like for women, like I don't think like, oh, was her hair tied up? Was it, you know, down? You know what? You know, all those things. And I think Jesus, like
something that could help them. Pick
I am not paying attention. Like, was she wearing a white shirt, a blue shirt, a red shirt? I have no idea. Yeah. That lady just crazy. And you know, just in the cops.
when I started dispatching here in Florida, and they sent me for my 40-hour beginner's dispatching course that we had for training and stuff. I remember one of the days, the instructor, he was up there and you know, there's about 20 or 30 of us in this classroom, and he's talking to us and this guy walks in and he goes, I got something for you really quick. And he goes, oh yeah, come in. And the guy comes in, hands him something. It looked like a piece of paper. And it was funny because he walks up to the front, hands him what he had. And then he purposely walks through the one side of the class and all the way to the back and then leaves. And I remember thinking, I wonder why that was kind of weird. Why didn't he turn around and go back? So then we're talking and stuff. And then out of nowhere, he goes, so the gentleman that was just in here, what was he wearing? I don't know. Like, and so he's asking all of us and we're all giving a completely different description. And he goes, okay. He goes, the reason I ask is because I want you to know that when you're taking these phone calls, you know, this is how fast people see, you know, a suspect or, you know, a victim or whatever. People don't always see certain things. They see what they want to see. And what he had, the piece of paper, it wasn't a piece of paper. It was a picture. It was a Polaroid of that guy.
Oh.
someone had taken it of him, and he's like with his hands out, you know, like, I don't know, you know, type pose in the picture. Yeah. And he turns it around and shows it to everyone, and we pass it. We're passing it through the class, and I thought, son of a bitch. I was like, yeah.
Failed. Everybody failed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all of us. Yeah. Not one person had anything right, you know, because he goes, did he have hair? Did he not have hair? And I thought, did he have hair?
Yeah. And it's funny when people ask you those questions, if they start like pushing the thought of if they did or didn't have something, or were they wearing like, oh, well, yeah, maybe that was. And you're like, no, you're just, you can't take what someone else is telling you and turn it into a person,
yeah,
what it is that they're wearing, right, or what they look like. Yeah. I mean, most people don't notice either, like at convenience stores or like the Dollar General, places like that, that they actually have the height measurement at the door. Like, have you ever noticed that there's line that
there
has
numbers? Yeah.
And it's so that if someone sees someone, they say, were they around this tall? If you had looked and saw, you know, yeah, when they walked by, they matched up to that height line. So, I mean, a lot of places like that have that, but people don't notice that it's there.
They're probably catching it on camera because most of those places have surveillance for like,
for the exit. Yeah, when they go out, they can see that as well.
Like, you know, they're around that height. But most people, I don't think, notice that it's actually there. I'm like, did you notice that, you know, you can see how tall people are?
I'm sorry. That's why I'm so suspicious of people who come in wearing a hat and glasses. We're in Florida. I guess it'd be more suspicious in like Indiana or Michigan because where's the sun half the time? I don't know. But like in Florida, like seriously, like at least 85% of the people who walk into a building are wearing a hat and sunglasses. And that's the first thing I notice a lot of time when people walk in. I'm like, oh, why are you wearing sunglasses? Why are you wearing a hat?
Yeah, you're like, waiting for them to take it off. You're like
yeah. Ma'am, can you remove your sunglasses?
Yeah. Well, it's scary. I mean, because you do think about it. I mean, you have to, like at my job too, I mean, we have to take those like active shooter courses and all the stuff about just being aware of people around you. And a lot of times we do. I mean, they tell us that all the time. Like a lot of the girls I work with, like if we see somebody come in that looks suspicious, you know, we kind of make it a point to like point it out to everyone and be like, did you see that person that came in? Like, just be aware, you know, there was somebody who kind of looked a little suspicious. I mean, it's a big building too, so there's a lot of places to walk around and hide in. So, I mean, a lot of the times we're like, did you guys see that person? And you're like, hey, and you make sure you're aware of the people who walk in, because I mean, you don't know who it is that's walking in. And, you know, if somebody needs information,
right,
you need to be aware of the people that are walking around. And you're like,
it's a lot of crazy stuff that happens, man. Now, speaking of which, I was going into the last part of this, the last call that I want to mention, and it has to do with Al Capone. So,
Al Capone.
Yeah, Al Capone. So, and also, again, the link will be in the podcast post for this so that you can hear more about the story with Al Capone and the area that we used to live in. But basically, Al Capone had a hideout, like in probably many states. But in Southwest Michigan, there was an area where this old hotel was that they called the Yellow Motel. Because when you would come up to this hotel, it was a like putrid yellow color. and they said that
yellow.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They said the place was haunted, that you know, he would be there, he would take people who were enemies or owed them money or whatever, and that they would get killed there. And pretty far behind this hotel was like this quicksand pit, and they would, and again, this is like legend. lore. Yeah, lore, this folklore. And that they would drop them off there and wouldn't be seen again. And also underneath where this place was, there were like tunnels and everything, and they would hide out there. Like, there's crazy stories about this place. Now, in that area, one time we had gotten a phone call from a local record service. And I remember they said, you know, I just got a phone call about a car crash. There's nobody around the car at all. But I'm headed out there to pick it up, but I need one of your deputies to come out to do, a report on it so that we can take it and then, you know, junk it or do whatever they're going to do with it. Or in case somebody called in saying, you know, this is my car, they would have it at their yeah. place. So we said, all right. And we had put it out over the air, and one of the officers was already headed home. And he said, I'm not too far from that area. I'll just go and check it and then just wait for the record to show up. And he said, all right. So, you know, we're just again, this is already towards the end of our shift, and we're just waiting and waiting. And then the officer keys up on the radio and he goes, Adam 3 Central. I'm like, Adam 3, go ahead. And he says, you know, you might want to call the wrecker and just let them know that they don't have to come out after all. And I remember all of us were in there. I was like, okay, well, I wonder why. So we key up and 10-4, can you give further information? We can let them know why they, you know, can disregard. And he says, well, I'm out here in the area and I don't see a car at all. I've looked all over the place, all around this area, and there's no car. Also, by the way, this is the area by the Yellow Motel. So there's actually a story, more lore, of a car crash, apparently that, or supposedly that it happened with Al Capone and his gang, where they crashed a car up into a tree, mm-hmm. and they hauled and they took off and the car remained there. Well, the story goes that at certain times in the middle of the night, people will pass by and they'll see a car that's crashed up against a tree. And when someone goes back to check it to see if everybody's okay, the car's gone. And I remember a few weeks before that, we had been talking about that. And then this happened.
Yeah.
And the officer goes, I'm going to be headed home now. And, you know, mark me off as 1024, which is just clear and complete of the call.
Oh, my God.
And I remember us standing there and I thought, I'm glad I don't have to go by that area because that's like, pretty creepy.
Yeah, that would be scary.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Well, that's crazy. What I was going to say is like when you think about that, like I wonder how you guys feel taking calls like that or the police officers or whoever else who goes out looking for things like that and then you don't find anything. Because that's like how I said when Chris and I heard someone screaming, you know, for help. It was faint, but clear. Like I heard the word help.
Right.
And it freaked me out. And no, you better call 911. And he did call. The police officer came. And like I said, it was before Christmas. And he asked us to identify where we were. And we told him we had a Christmas light outside of our window that was pretty noticeable. And he said, okay, I'm out here. And we could see the lights. And he walked around. He knocked on some doors and didn't find anyone. And he was like, bye.
Yeah.
But so it's like, well, what was that then? Like, what did I hear? And I'm like, I don't know what happened. They don't know what happened. And then, you know, that's scary if you hear later that, you know, either someone did need help or you just never hear about it again. And you're just like, okay.
Yeah, you don't get that closure.
Yeah.
It just goes on and on. Welcome to our world.
That's
well,
scary.
Going into the wrap up of this episode, thank you very, very much for being on and sharing some thoughts and everything on this story, especially the one where, you know, someone had broken into our house. I always wondered what it was from your side being that age.
Oh, yeah.
And just remembering all of us hauling ass.
Apparently, Devon was always traumatized.
Scared shitless is what I was.
Yes.
To this day.
So for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that'll be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @91podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode is supported by Rapid Deploy and actually sponsored by Rapid Deploy as well as Rapid SOS and presented by Nina and supported by In Digital. This episode, along with all the others, can be heard 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.